It's time for Let's Talk Money.
Good afternoon, Chattanooga. You're listening to Let's Talk Money with Jim Place and Kyle Bryant. Open up our market with the Dow Jones sitting at 48,475, down 228. The S&P sitting at 6,829, down 72. And a lot of red on the board this afternoon, I should say. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing fine, as a matter of fact. I'm more today like an observation pilot. Like Jeff Dean, a good friend of mine that's retired from Delta now. He'd spent several years where he'd just sit in there and he would be observing the pilots, grading the pilots,
all right,
per se.
But bring it on.
Other than that,
okay,
I'm just here to...
Just to listen?
Listen.
All right, we'll see. Max, how are you, sir?
It's Natalie. Surprise.
Good. On a Friday, is he out playing golf or something?
No, so he took over the morning show because the morning show was live from White Oak Bicycle Co-op.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, so we got, we don't have a final count, but the last I heard, it was almost 100 bikes that we got donated in a four-hour remote this morning. So
amazing.
I was on location. Max covered for me back at the studio, and I had to return the favor.
Awesome. That's a great organization. My sons are big bike riders, and we've donated a couple over the years. What a great time to do that around Christmas
absolutely.
For kids and all that good stuff. Well, thank you for filling in.
Absolutely.
Today, we've got some guests from Chambliss Modern Stouffville here. We've got Shelton Chambers and Nick Nestor. How are y'all?
Hey, how are ya?
Thanks for being here. We're going to try to keep it as light as we can when we get attorneys and CPAs involved. And that is another reason. We got Jim here to help keep us light. Can you commit to that, Jim?
Oh, yes.
Okay. All right. We'll try to keep it serious. He'll keep us light here. But anyway. All right.
If you get too far in the weeds, I'll raise my hand.
Yeah, that's fair. So, Shelton, go ahead and introduce yourself and give us a little background. You're a reformed CPA like me, right?
I am, yes.
Okay.
I ran away from that. Now working at Chambliss, so I'm still a CPA, also an attorney, working in the Trust and Estates group.
Okay.
Just helping people plan their lives.
So that was a good transition, obviously, much like financial planning for me. The CPA knowledge and taxation and all of that flows really well into the estate planning because it's a key component. You know, I hear advisors that say they can't offer tax advice, and I'm like, I don't know how you can give financial advice because 40% of it is tax, right?
Right, so, right. It's all integrated.
And the same is true with the estate and trust and all of the things that you do.
Yeah, and we want to make sure that what we're doing doesn't have, you know, if we're doing a plan for someone, it doesn't have an adverse consequence that we weren't thinking about. You know, oh, we're going to structure, you know, create this trust and put some stuff in there and then come to find out then, you know, oh, now we've increased their tax liability by, you know, two times.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to always be thinking about that. Same for us, you know, people call and they want money and we're always like, well, okay, do you want to pay tax on it? Do you not want to pay tax? Here are the ramifications. And then ultimately, the ball's back in their courts to make the decision.
Right.
So a lot of that goes in.
Absolutely.
Probably a lot more zeros behind some of the things you're doing, some of the structures you're putting together. But it's all important. Because we all, at the end of the day, as Americans, we can fight about a lot. We can disagree about a lot. But most of us want to pay as little tax as possible.
One of the things I think we're always looking at, what are the unintended consequences?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And Jim, you know, that often comes up. Another thing that we commonly see is, oh, elderly parent, they don't want to go through probate. Mm-hmm. They decide to deed their house to their kids. And it's like that maybe checks out one box, but we've given up the step up in basis.
Yeah.
We've exposed it to creditor risk, and we have a ton of unintended consequences with that.
Yeah. All right.
Because what looks like the easiest isn't necessarily
the easiest
the way
is rarely the best.
Yes. Way to do it.
Yeah.
All right, Shelton, you introduced yourself. Nick, give us a little background on you. I've worked with you a lot over the years just by virtue of the things that we've done, but give a little intro about yourself and what you do.
Yeah, so I'm also in the Trust and Estate group at Chambliss. And a lot of our work, as Shelton mentioned, is estate planning, tax planning, as well as business succession planning for clients, trying to figure out how we're going to help perpetuate their assets or their business to the next generation.
Yeah, and I think that's where we cross paths most of the time in my former profession, being in the CPA world. I did a lot of transaction work. And so having that, the attorneys on the other side that understood that and could understand structure and you know, when you're in one of those periods, there's a lot that goes into that. It's not just selling your business and getting a check and going home. It's paying taxes. It's unwinding entity structure. It's restructuring right at the finish line. It's gifting. There's a lot of complexity that goes into that, and you guys have always been phenomenal at helping with that, and it's been easy to send you business because I know it's going to get taken care of and it's going to be A-OK. So anyway, thanks for the intros. I've got just kind of a list of questions here. Some of these are in the weeds, some of them aren't, but just out of the gate, what are you guys doing as attorneys other than being on a radio show December 12th? Obviously, year-end is looming. Everything's an emergency, right? Meanwhile, you're probably going to holiday parties, trying to buy presents.
Go to all the kids' performances.
Yes, I've been to those myself.
Yes.
It's a little stressful. But legally, what are some of the things that have to get done by 12/31?
Gifting.
Yes.
Yep. Gifting is a major one.
Okay.
Charitable and non-charitable.
Absolutely.
We see them both.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. We've got a lot of clients that, you know, luckily this year, if we had been here 6 months ago, I think we would have said, oh, we're going to be focused this time in December. We're going to be focused on making sure everyone maximizes their exemption, because at that point we thought that the lifetime exemption was going to go down.
Did you really think it was going to go down?
I
never bought it.
I did. Really? I did.
You're the only person I've heard that.
I disagree. I kept telling everyone, I've stopped trying to read my crystal ball, but I really think it's going to go down.
Oh, you know why it wasn't going down?
The tax return would have been really hard.
No,
the market.
Because the guys, men and women voting for it, mm-hmm. all have a tax liability now higher than the number.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know,
real simple. I mean, most
fair
of
enough.
These people used to have a million or two.
That sounds
now
a
they
little
got 15
cynical.
Or $20 million. Well, it is what it is.
Surely that's not
Wait,
it.
That's 100% what it is.
Yeah.
And my prediction was the market, I feel like, would have been adjusting if there was real thought that that was going to happen. Like, you would have seen the stock market correct. Obviously, I'm not a market timer, but there are macroeconomic things that generally point to where that's going to go.
But
anyway.
It would have required it, or it did require an agreement in Congress to make it, to extend it.
And that's why I just didn't think it was going to happen. I was like, we cannot get everybody on the same page for this. It's just.
Hey, one simple rule. They will never screw themselves.
Out of real life.
Touche.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, but, that's right.
Well, y'all are right. I was wrong.
Well, I mean, I'll give you another example. It'll be like the changes they're going to have to make with Social Security.
Yeah.
Every one of those people, if they don't make those changes and Social Security benefits diminish by 25%, they would all be voted out of office. They won't do that because they want to. They do it because they have no choice.
Yeah.
And that was the same thing. And I think we're going to find the same thing potentially happens on this healthcare subsidy thing.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to be able to withstand the onslaught of what it's going to cost you at the ballot box if you don't extend those subsidies. Whether you agree with it or don't agree with it, it's a completely different subject.
Yeah. Sure. So we got a bit on a rabbit hole there about the to the phone lines. We got Randy on the line.
Hey, Kyle. Hey, Jim. This is Randy from South Pittsburgh. Longtime listener, first-time caller. Pleasure to meet you boys today. And Sheldon, Nick, thanks for being on. I've been talking to my accountant over in Jasper, and I'm a little confused and hoping you can clear up a question for me.
We'll do our
best. I took my retirement, and I had a buddy. He told me to invest in one of those opportunity funds, opportunity zones or something or another, and there's some partnership and flip structure, but apparently my partnership goes from 99 to 5% over like 10 years, but we're only in year 8, and I'm trying to figure out, you know, do I get my step-up basis after only 10 or just in year 8? I know my ownership's gone down, and I'm just trying to, like you said, Kyle, I'm trying to pay the government the least amount of money, and I'm just, you know, wondering if Sheldon and Nick can help me.
Well, I appreciate it, Randy. I think that's probably going to be a question that you should reach out directly. That's pretty far in the weeds on opportunity zones. You know, that was part of the Trump tax credits that came out there about reinvesting. Thanks for the call. I'll share their contact information. You can get in touch with them. That's one of the things that did actually come through, along with the back to kind of the personal exemptions. That was one of the things in the real estate world that stepped up and helped us. But when we go back and talk about the personal exemptions – Explain that a little bit more. That's the amount of money you can leave to your heirs without the estate tax being kicking in.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Every person, every U.S. citizen has has an amount, a lifetime exemption that they can either give during life, at death, to anyone or anything.
Yeah.
And that amount today is $13.99 million. Yep. In January, thanks to these new credits, it's going to – or the new tax code, it's going to go up to $15
million. Yep.
But in addition –
and that's per person. So per if you're person, married, you've got $30 million to give away before the estate tax kicks in.
Absolutely. And if you have anything above that, then you start paying tax on that.
Right.
So it's a rare person that falls into that above – above that amount.
The realization was, let's say, when I began in this business 40 years ago, that exemption was $625,000.
Exactly. Right. Yep.
So we had a lot of people that would fall above that $1,250,000 exemption. Mm-hmm. That world's completely changed.
Exactly.
And, I mean, even as recently as 2017, pre-Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, that exemption was under $10 million.
Yeah.
It was more closely to $10 million a couple.
Yeah.
So, I mean, over the last
less than 10 years,
we've tripled it.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that is attributed to value increases. I don't really think estate tax was meant to be punitive to the common person. I think it was for those higher end.
Exactly.
But anyway, we'll get more into that. Let's take a break. We'll come back to that question and talk a little bit more about it. You're listening to Let's Talk Money. 267-1023 is the number. Thanks. You're back with Let's Talk Money. We've got Shelton and Nick here from Chambliss with us today, and we kind of left off talking about gifting and personal and charitable and all of those type of things. One thing I do want to discuss or kind of remove the confusion, if we can. We get people in here all the time, and there's this misconception out there that if I gift money to someone, I owe tax on it. So we get that all the time. Hey, I want to give my kids $200,000 to pay off their mortgage or $150,000 for their kids' education or those type of things. And there's this concern always that somehow triggers a tax event. Mm-hmm. Do you all run into that? People ask me that question?
All the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So unpack that a little bit. So what happens if I want to give my kid just like that a lump sum that's $200,000 this year? What are the logistics of how I go about doing that?
So logistically, it's pretty simple in that it's, you know, call you or Jim and say, hey, I need to transfer $200,000 to their account. Done. When we're thinking about it from the tax side, if we're thinking through the beneficiary, the child's perspective, gifts aren't income for income tax purposes. So no consequence to the child.
Yep.
And then from your perspective, there's really three layers there. First, the first $19,000 you give to any person is just totally ignored.
And that's also spouse. So in my case, if my wife and I wanted to give my child $200,000, we could each give them $19,000 with no reporting requirement.
Exactly right.
Okay.
And then for the next $162,000, the balance there, that is a taxable gift, but the term taxable gift is a little misleading.
Yes.
Because of that $15 million exemption we discussed, you don't pay tax on that gift until you've given more than $15 million in your lifetime.
So what do you do with that $162,000? Why is that considered taxable?
Because we need to, in that case, file a Form 709 federal gift tax return to report the gift and use up a portion of your unified credit, that $15 million exemption.
You're just subtracting that against the $15 million.
Exactly. You're basically raising your hand and telling the IRS that you gave your child this money. Mm-hmm. Okay, I have $15 million to give. Mm-hmm. Okay, I've given 160. So I've got the balance that will continue to rise, most likely, to give away. So that's the thing that I think people get confused about a lot is it doesn't generate taxable income to anyone. It doesn't create a deduction for me. It doesn't create an income to them. It's just a reporting issue. The only thing that it does is you're going to want a professional to probably prepare that return for you because it's an ongoing list. So the next time, say it's 10 years down the road and you want to give your child $500,000, Same. Hopefully, if the laws are the same, it's going to be the same principle. Now you've got 660 that you've gifted against that 15 million. So it's a constant. It's just a way to keep score.
And I got to tell you, that was the other reason I didn't think you'd see a change in that.
Yeah.
Because you were going to have retroactive situations where a person thought they had a combined $28 million exemption and they've given $8 million away and now they're going to change that exemption and they're going to cut it in half where you're much closer to the final number. Mm-hmm. And the whole world gets kind of apprehensive when you start doing it that way. Yeah. It'd be as if they passed a law that said your Roth IRA is now taxable. Almost impossible to do.
You're right. And, you know, there's another element that should be unpacked from that whole discussion, and that is there are certain gifts, no matter the amount, that are tax-free, like no matter the amount. So that is gifts made directly to educational institutions, gifts made or payments made directly to healthcare facilities.
Okay.
So, for example, if you wanted to pay $200,000 of tuition, let's mm-hmm. say, and you write that check directly to the school, that doesn't even touch your 15. It doesn't go against that $19,000.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons why you really do want a professional to help with that filing,
uh-huh.
because you might come in and say, okay, I just, you might think, oh, I need to reduce my exemption by X dollars because I made a $200,000 gift.
Yeah.
Well, we might look at it and say, okay, well, you actually just, paid this huge medical bill.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't need to report that. That's tax-free.
Yeah.
Or you might have said, I made $100,000 of a gift to my grandchild's 529 plan.
Yep.
Well, that's got a special rule mm-hmm. where we can use 5 years worth of your exemption of your annual exemption. So again, that this year is $19,000. You can use 5 years and superfund it in 1 year by just checking a box on the return.
So when you superfund 529 is a great tool. I think we could debate the state of college and the cost and all of those things, but the reality is it's not going away. And now you can use those 529 funds to fund K-12 private education, which is a big deal in this town.
Yeah.
I would argue it's probably a bigger deal here than a lot of places. And so when you're thinking about that, the 529, when you say super fund, mm-hmm. my understanding is you can put that in there now mm-hmm. and it counts for the next several years.
Five years.
Next 5 years. Yeah. What's the annual limit on that, not to put you on the spot? I can't quote annual limits that well, but.
So what I will tell people to do, mm-hmm. so this year the exemption amount is not the amount that you can give to anybody without any sort of filing or anything is $19,000.
Yep.
And so what I would say is, okay, and if you're single and not married,
yep.
I would say fund it with $95,000.
Okay.
You can make that election. And it's treated as if you've made 5 years work. You're spreading mm-hmm. it out over 5 years.
But you're putting it in now.
You're putting the 95 in now, but you're going to spread that over 5 years.
But you can't put any more in there for them, right? For the next, the next year, could you put?
Well, next year you can't because the exemption is still going to be $19,000.
Right.
But if the exemption goes up to 20, you could do $1,000.
Okay. And so the advantage there is, A, you've got the cash, you want to go ahead. But the 529 plan, you can put it in. It grows tax-free. It's taken out tax-free. Mm-hmm.
As long as it's for an education. Appropriate purpose.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And so there's a huge advantage. And this comes into play with what we were talking about earlier. These are the type of things you can be doing mm-hmm. toward year end that are extremely helpful. And also what you can do strategy-wise is if I've got, say I want to give my kid $100,000. So it's December 12th, and me and my wife are going to give 100. Well, right now we could each give them 19. Mm-hmm. January 1, we could give them 19.
Exactly.
And then maybe the next year, there's ways you can straddle those year-end planning opportunities. And with the 529, that's another great example of mm-hmm. go ahead and fund that. Any type of annual limits you can think through and kind of play that we're in a unique time of year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so are y'all doing a lot of things like that?
And I think especially because it's the holidays and people start thinking, what do I want to do for gifts? And, I think grandparents kind of fall into this, I don't really, I don't necessarily want to go and spend $500 at Sephora. I'm not knocking Sephora, but sure. I don't know what kind of makeup my grandchild needs or wants. And so what's another option?
What's a tangible thing you can do for them?
Yeah. And so a lot of times, I'm not saying don't go out and get them something to unwrap if that's your jam, but I think a lot of people like the idea of I'm actually getting them something for their future.
Yeah.
I'm getting
them
something to help them, plan.
Yeah, and the same goes, 529s are great, but also even just a brokerage account. We advise people around that all the time. If you really want to help your kids, give them some money that's going to help them in years from now. I mean, we tell people that for our kids. I've got three young ones and staring down tuition payments down the road. Any help you can provide on that front, let's go ahead and talk about it.
And something else we should mention, I think it goes back to thinking through these gifts and not just making them and speaking with someone.
Sure.
Is one common thing that I think we see a lot is grandparents want to pay kids to or grandkids tuition.
Yeah.
But they cut the check to their child,
yes.
who then pays it.
Yeah.
So now we've made this very ineffective, inefficient strategy when all you had to do was write that check to pick the school.
Yeah.
So it's very important to think through and consider these various options.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of these options and the beauty of talking to someone like yourselves or listening to the show. These are the types of things we help people with all the time. It's we were talking about it off the air, and we can get more into this later, but it's about having your options available and understanding what you can and can't do inside the laws. And how do you make these laws work inside the rules to your benefit? And if it's waiting a couple weeks to write the next check or things like that, absolutely do that and take advantage of it.
And I commonly tell clients, tell me where you want to, in English, just tell me where you want to get.
Yes.
It's our job to get you from point A to point B, but you just tell me what point B is.
Around here, we say that, Jim says this all the time, is define what a win to you is. Tell us what winning the game means, and we'll try to build a plan around that. Listen to Let's Talk Money, 267-1023 is the number.
Let's Talk Money. Talk Radio 102.3.
You're back with Let's Talk Money. 267-1023 is the number. Nick and Shelton. All right, so we've talked a lot about gifting and year-end planning. Another thing I want to talk about, common question we get, is around trusts. All right, everyone thinks they need a trust for everything. Across the board, hey, I've got a home and a brokerage account. Do I need a trust? Talk me through a little bit around who actually needs one. So take, for example, a retiree that's got a few million dollars in an IRA. They own a personal residence, no debt on it. Does that someone like that need a trust?
Well, let me back up, because you can start naming the different type of trusts they are. Mm-hmm. Start with just kind of the generic, living
simple,
trust.
Simple. Does someone like that need a simple trust, I guess, is the question.
I would say if the only asset they have is a retirement account and their primary their own home, probably not.
Yeah.
A lot of what we can do can be navigated without utilizing that. Now, mm-hmm. once we get down to but then at their death, their child is got a substance abuse problem or has
they
want
to control things from the grave
or something like not even necessarily control things from,
protect
the, grave,
from the grave
but
I
protect
guess.
Protect their beneficiaries from from a rocky marriage or something like that. That's a different story, but just your plain Jane, like today, do I need to set up a revocable trust and put something in there? Probably. I think it depends, but in that situation, I'd probably say no.
Okay.
Now, if they have an IRA, their primary residence, but then they also have a condo in Florida, that's a total, just that one thing. That is when stop.
What would your advice be to someone in that scenario?
Let's create a revocable trust.
Okay.
Let's put your homes in there.
Okay.
Because what we don't want to do is have to go down to Florida and probate just because, go and hire a Florida licensed attorney to go probate in Florida just because you have this condo.
Right.
And so it's going to save you thousands of dollars to just set this up and put it in there.
It's more about an ease of operation than it is a liability protection. Is that what I'm hearing?
A revocable trust is rarely ever going to be a liability protection unless we're talking about a special kind of trust. Rarely going to be liability protection. Just a single revocable trust, not going to provide any liability protection. It is just to make your life easier.
Right.
Now, I will say this, though. Contradicting what I just said earlier, say that person has got a brokerage account, not a retirement mm-hmm. account, but a brokerage account,
yep.
Same amount and a house, but has been diagnosed with dementia
mm-hmm.
Or Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Now, that's a situation where I may say, let's go ahead and do a trust because we can go ahead and establish who's going to be your successor trustee yep. when yep. you are unable to manage your affairs.
Makes sense.
And that is a that trustee relationship has a much better long-term, a much better ease of administering than trying to rely on a power of attorney for years and years and years.
There's also a situation that you can get into that may be a little bit more unique. I can think of one where I had a client who had about $20,000 in the bank that had almost $3 million in their 401k. Mm-hmm. They had one child. That child lived in Seattle and was a brain surgeon. Highly litigious industry. So now you have a situation where you have a 401k or it's rolled into an IRA, and the beneficiary of that IRA does need to be protected, and it does need a type of trust that would be a little bit different mm-hmm. that stands the capacity of creditors not being able to, or a lawsuit not being able to attack that money on behalf of the adult child.
That's exactly right, but I think a common thing that we see is really trying to educate the clients that we can still create trust for those beneficiaries without mom or dad having a revocable trust. So for that beneficiary in particular, we'd want to use an irrevocable trust.
But it wouldn't take place until that.
Exactly right. Exactly.
Yes.
It's just in their will and it says, you know, when I pass away, I create this trust for my child.
So the beneficiary of the IRA becomes that irrevocable trust.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and exactly.
And that's more protection, things like that. And that makes sense.
And I think that this kind of highlights how it is never a one size fits all. Like there's a lot of people that are like, I mean, I'm not that complicated.
Yeah.
I mean, this is super self-serving. I'm not that complicated. I can get on LegalZoom and do what I need it to do.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, but you don't, LegalZoom's not going to tell you why, you know, like with the brain surgeon, anytime I hear, oh, my child's a brain surgeon, a lot of times clients come in and are like, my kid is great. They've got this, you know, they're a brain surgeon. What could go wrong? And I'm like, boop, boop, boop. That's the last person that needs to get everything out right because I want to protect them from if they ever get sued.
Yeah.
And depending on what state you're in, some states are not very litigious friendly. Some are just, you know, you can sue and get these huge judgments.
Yeah.
For just stupid reasons.
Yeah. Makes sense. To the phone lines, Rodney.
Hey, I just have a general tax deduction kind of question. My son's, he just got his first full-time job out of being out of college. He's going to be at home for a little while we, you know, figure out how to help him save up to get a house or whatever he's going to do. I guess my general question is, I'm going to claim him as a dependent this year just because he's been here living in the house till now. When is a time when you should think about transitioning to, you know, me not claiming him and him filing on his own as far as how that works?
Yeah. Well, how old is he, Rodney?
He's 21. He'll be 22 in March.
Is he in school?
No.
Okay. You're providing half of his support, though?
Yeah, quite more than half.
Right now. Yeah, that's kind of the test. There's the age. Are they in school, and are you providing half their support? And, you know, it depends on how much he's making. It's going to be he's likely going to want to file. You claim him, and he might want to file on his own. I would put it in the software.
I mean, he's had a part-time job for a while, so I still claim him, but I still have him file.
To get his payroll taxes
being claimed by somebody. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was making so little, he wasn't really losing any. He wasn't having any taken out.
Yeah.
But like he's going from a part-time job to a real full-time job type of situation. And so I just didn't know when's a good time to what's going to benefit him for when he should start actually filing on his own and not underneath me.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the call, Rodney. A lot of that comes down to the specifics of how much is being earned, how much you're earning, whether or not you can take the child tax credit. Give us a call offline, call the office, and let us know. We can walk you through the specifics of that. It's kind of a detailed question, so we'd be glad to help you out with that idea.
And I think it plays a lot into what other deductions are available to everyone.
Right.
You know, if he's going to be subject to the standard deduction and y'all are kind of maxed out, it might make it's not unusual for that to be a much more fact specific scenario. Yes.
Yeah, and that's a common question. I mean, it's one that there's not again, we talk about, Jim talks a lot around here, things aren't usually black and white. There's always context around every one of them.
You know, the other thing you're thinking about here, we just went from a conversation about millions of dollars in an IRA to a simple question about a 21-year-old living in your house.
Mm-hmm.
The questions that continue to come up aren't necessarily dollar and cent related all the time.
No.
And I often say, you know, from the estate planning side, at least for what we do, the dollars and cents aren't really what make plans complex. I mean, if it's $100 million or $1 million, the estate, we've got the tools in our arsenals. Mm-hmm. We're comfortable with them. And we can pretty well tackle what we need to tackle in a relatively simple manner. It's oftentimes the family dynamics.
Yeah.
And then at times what the assets are that complicate things more so than the true number of zeros behind the number.
And the other thing that happens is change. I mean, I recently had a client of mine, 45-year-old woman, Austin, Texas, with a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, whose husband passed away. Now we're looking at, we had all types of moving parts where the estate planning needs to be completely redone, who are going to be the guardian of the children needs to be redone, an understanding that I was aware of the fact that the state of Texas is a community property state, mm-hmm. which means that in their brokerage account, it's not a 50% step-up in basis mm-hmm. in death, it's 100% step-up in basis in death. You got to know where they die, where they're at. The transfer of the title of a home is different in the state of Texas than it is in the state of Tennessee. So, and you're going to need a law firm. In essence, this woman wanted to use a group of attorneys in Chattanooga, Tennessee, but it was going to have to turn around and be signed off by another group of attorneys in Texas. And the group of attorneys in Texas, when they sign off, they accept the liability. So your charges were going to probably be twice as much if you had just gone to the firm in Texas. I ended up getting the referral to a judge in Austin who gave me the name of a good qualified estate attorney and hooked those people up to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's where you got to kind of know what you don't know, and know what the potential implications of it are for somebody, because you're dealing more often with a client that doesn't know.
Yes,
it's
exactly
not that they're stupid. It's just that they've not been exposed to that.
Thankfully, they haven't been exposed to a lot of that. A lot of this stuff's tragic, and so you don't want to become numb to it. But anyway, all right, listen to Let's Talk Money. 267-1023 is the number. We'll be right back.
Let's Talk Money. Talk Radio 102.3.
You're back with Let's Talk Money. 267-1023 is the number. All right, guys. We've got just a few minutes left. One of the things that we were talking about off air was charitable contributions. And again, that's one that's kind of the laws have changed a little bit. There's a lot of ways you can give to charity. There's some tax efficient ways to do it. What, from y'all's perspective, what's the most, I mean, common way to do it this toward the end of the year? Is it funding a DAF? Is it donating stock? All of the above? I'm going to talk through some of those options that people have out there. Obviously, giving cash is the easiest.
Cash is the easiest. I would say that's what most people do.
Yeah.
But sometimes what I see sometimes is people will sell some stock to generate the cash, and mm-hmm. then they'll turn around and give the cash. If you've got cash sitting in your account, that's one thing. But if you're having to do something that generates a tax consequence, like selling stock,
mm-hmm.
Then what we always try to talk people into, especially this time of year when everyone's trying to, you know, do some tax planning and get ready for the end of the year. we always suggest, instead of doing cash, doing low basis stock. To the charity instead. You get the deduction for the fair market value, but you don't have to recognize the income. And then if you've got an IRA, if you have any required minimum distributions from an IRA and you are charitably inclined at all, focus on taking that required minimum distribution and using that to fund your charitable distribution.
Yeah, absolutely. Even one step farther, if you're 70 and a half.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yes.
It's not the 73 rule. Yes. It's the 70 and a half rule. If you're giving $20,000 a year to your church, you need to be doing it through your IRA. It's tax-free to you, and it's tax-free to the charity.
Absolutely. Yep.
All right, we got another caller. Den, you there?
Yes, I am, yeah. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Well, thanks for calling.
All right. Listen, I just got a question. I've talked with a CPA, but I sold a home here this year that we'd had for a long time, the wife and I, and we had built another one in 2019 and moved there and just left our son in the house that we previously had. I'm getting told now that I'll have a capital gains on that tax. Is there any way away from that or anything?
Yeah, and we're going to run out of time here. It's a little bit complicated. I'll go through it quickly. Basically, the rule of thumb is you've got to live there as your primary residence 2 out of the last 5 years. So if you're going to sell that home and you haven't lived there as your primary residence, then you can try that. You can, you know, you could move back. You could live there for 2 years. But call our office sometime, Den, and we can get in the specifics of that. Excuse me. Call the number of 423-933-1828.
Okay, I certainly will. I certainly appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling.
And that's a weird deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
And it catches people all the time.
Yeah.
Especially, I let my kid live there for just a few years. And now they've got this, again, going back to unintended tax consequences, this really bad consequence that no one was thinking about.
Yeah.
And they thought they were doing the right thing.
Yeah,
particularly if they weren't really paying attention and started depreciating the house.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Anyway. All right, guys, thanks for being here. If you want to get in touch with Chambliss, feel free to give us a call. We'll put you in touch or check out their website. All their contact information is there. Hope you enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being
here.
We'll do it next time. All right, coming up next, Yappy Live 1 to 3, Sport Talk 3 to 7. Y'all have a great weekend.